Welcome, everyone, and good afternoon to the Imported Water Committee meeting for Thursday, February 26th. I am Chair Myers, and this meeting is called to order. Apparently, all of our technology issues have been resolved. Even if they haven't, the good news with water is, as long as gravity continues, we'll be okay. So can you please call the roll?
Chair Myers?
Present.
Vice Chair Madaffer?
Here.
Vice Chair Katz?
Here.
Directors Ayala?
Here.
Castañeda?
Here.
Flessy? Fungsakai?
Present.
Heidemann?
Here.
Kirschbaum?
Here.
Miller?
Here.
Paul?
Yes, present.
Rivera?
Here.
Scalzetti?
Present.
And Serrano?
Here.
Chair, you have a quorum of the committee.
Thank you. As we discuss the items on the agenda, I will be calling on directors who push their speaker button, assuming it works. Please limit your comments to matters not already addressed and state all your points when you have a chance to speak, excuse me, so we can move forward through the agenda. Are there any additions to the agenda?
No additions to the agenda.
All right, thank you. At this time, I'd ask if there are any public speakers.
Calling on public comment for matters on imported committee agenda or within the jurisdiction of the committee. If there are public speakers in the Zoom waiting room, please raise your hand through the Zoom app or press star 9 if you're listening by phone. Chair, there's no speakers.
I think we do have a couple of speakers.
I'm sorry, yes.
Good afternoon, and you may proceed.
Marco, you have 3 minutes. You may begin now.
Hello, good afternoon. We, Cesar and Purita Javier, that's me, both seniors with existing medical condition and victims of ceramics home business emitting toxicity, poisoning the air we breathe at neighborhood dedicated as residential zone since 1984. We are hurt, particularly me, Purita, physically, emotionally, and even financially since we began reporting to lawful authorities at city, APCD, county, and Sandag in June 2021. This is our 5th year seeing solution. And nothing has been done to uproot the cause. Honorable Mayor Todd Gloria, your APCD failed our expectation. 77 residents signed the petition to abate and or move the hazardous those business to a safer site. The city 11 elected officials ignore and neglected our health and safety issue. we live in fear, the same fear the victims of Tijuana River Valley, a crisis that began in 1993. Air, water, land, and coastal pollution.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Javier, it's your turn. You have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Serrano's here, and Councillor Whitburn. You were the witness in our consistent plea, short of kneeling before you guys. I know when you pressured the council members, oh, you have to approve this water increase because we are facing high cost of chemicals, et cetera, in the process of pure water. It is true. We are a witness. You held up our lawmakers. That includes, of course, your lookalike. Sorry, the mayor, Tar Gloria. Look at yourself, if I'm not right. Sir Whitburn, we were consistent with the council meeting, not only for water issue, but air issue. You know, the mayor owns the APCD. We have reason to believe, because he was the one to take it out from the county organization. Now we see the intention, it's business. They are massaging those big businesses, treatment plants, etc. And they forget the small businesses, which they exempt, when in fact they are polluting the air we breathe in our community, like this ceramics manufacturing. I say this because it is wrong. We asked of you, please, in the legislation that we haven't read the, oh, sorry, that's in the next meeting. My wife has to read that there will come a time that we will be relying on a Pacific vast salt water. I ask the mayor, the council members, are we prepared? Is the pure project is convertible to adapt with the inevitable desalination? The answer was silence. Are we ready to select between landfill and incineration process to get rid of the dirt of San Diego City show window of the region? We are not here to point fingers, but we do our job to inspire you that San Diegans want to live a longevity comparable to clean countries like Switzerland or Santa Barbara, if I may give the example. A nice city. You know the actor, the good, the bad, and the ugly? That's the place we dream of. More greens to absorb toxicity. More greens to produce clean water. Not what is the pure water is conceiving. Oh, there must be investigation.
Thank you for your comments. There must be apprehension
and punished with the full extent of the law. Excuse me, but that is the truth.
Thank you,
sir. We are witness. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
That concludes our in-person requests. If there are public speakers in the Zoom waiting room, please raise your hand through the Zoom app or press *9 if you're listening by phone. We have one speaker online. Last name, Brown. You have 3 minutes. You may begin now.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. Well, congratulations on figuring out the technical difficulties. I know that's tough, but I'll just get going. My name is Courtney Brown, and I'm a staff attorney with San Diego Coastkeeper. Today, I'd like to speak to action item number one on today's agenda, which is approving the MOU with the Bureau of Reclamation. We are fully supportive of this MOU and any efforts to explore monetizing our excess supplies. The sooner this agency moves forward with transfers, the sooner we can begin addressing our rate crisis. This needs to be an urgent priority, and we should be hearing about it in every major planning discussion. That said, we'd like to request an informational update on what's actively being done to pursue transfers within California. While there is real uncertainty created by the Colorado River negotiations and the snowpack statistics we heard about earlier in the Water Planning Committee, we in the San Diego region have the benefit of a reliable, diversified local supply that other agencies need right now. And we should be exploring every viable option, both inter and intrastate, to accomplish that. However, ratepayers remain largely in the dark on whether these possibilities are distant concepts or near-term realities. And frankly, that gap matters when people are struggling with rising rates. We un totally understand that negotiations require confidentiality. We're simply asking for regular public updates, even high-level ones, so the community can have confidence every tool is being pursued. We'd also note that we're eagerly awaiting the updated urban water management plan, as its demand forecasting will be critical context for how we evaluate the scale of these opportunities going forward. I'll just close with saying this MOU is a meaningful step that we hope all parties fully support. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank
Any
you.
other public speakers?
Yes, we have one more. Marco, you may begin now. You have 3 minutes to speak.
Hello, Dustin. Can you hear me?
Yes, please proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Myers, for recognizing that there are public speakers. And I also look forward to the outcome between the states for the Colorado River supply, and paying attention to see if the federal government by year's end will have to step in. Thank you very much. Have a good meeting.
Thank you very much.
That concludes our online speakers.
Okay, thank you for that. Chair's report, we'll start with news from the Colorado River regarding the post-2026 guideline update. By now, you have likely seen in the media that the basin states did not meet the Valentine's Day milestone that the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation had set for reaching a consensus proposal for new river operating guidelines. So what does that mean? Compounding the issue are the poor hydrologic conditions across the Colorado River Basin this winter that we heard a little bit about this morning. Today, as part of the committee session, staff will provide an update discussing these issues and will provide an overview of Reclamation's environmental review process underway to develop the post-2026 guidelines in light of the lack of a consensus understanding. Staff's presentation will include a look at the alternatives analyzed in the draft environmental impact statement, the EIS, released last month by the U.S. Bureau. March 2 is the deadline to provide comment letters to Reclamation of the draft EIS, and the Water Authority is actively working on that and preparing a letter, and additionally has provided a template letter to member agencies. Looking at the months ahead, there's a great deal at stake with implications for the lower basin and specifically California as we now move toward the release of the final Bureau EIS expected this summer. More, I guess, locally in California, noteworthy is a letter from Governor Newsom that was sent to the six other basin state governors dated February 11th. He voiced that he was encouraged by their shared commitment to find a common pathway to manage the river. He stated that we need a shared vision for addressing less rain and snow while ensuring communities and farms continue to receive the water they need. Also notable, especially locally, the letter agreed with Governor Cox of Utah that it was necessary to secure more water abundance by deploying advanced technologies and water transfers across the basin. The governor also cited that water reuse and desalination could be used to reduce the pressure on Lake Powell and Lake Mead. Turning more specifically to efforts toward interstate transfers, the Water Authority is continuing to actively work toward implementing interstate transfers that would utilize the Water Authority's desalinated seawater assets. Today, we'll hear a report from staff with a focus on a proposed memorandum of understanding with reclamation meant to support the development of an interstate transfer pilot program. Future transfers can be a tool to support the Water Authority's efforts toward rate stabilization for those we serve, and of course, affordability as part of that process. Regarding Metropolitan Water District and the State Water Project, late last month, the State Water Project allocation increased to 30%. I think we heard a little bit about that this morning. I guess we'll find out whether it might be increased with the recent rains we had. I guess we'll just wait and see. With this allocation, Met reported that its demands are nearly balanced now, and that with only a 33,000 acre foot supply gap, and that gap should be able to be made up with water storage programs. So this year is looking okay with Met, in at least in terms of supply. Related to that, the Pure Water Southern California project earlier this month, the Met board certified the final environmental impact report for its Pure Water Southern California project for planning purposes. Met is still in the planning phase of the project, and the board has not yet voted to fund implementation, but it will discuss that as part of the budget adoption process, which they have also started this month. We will hear more on that from the delegates as part of our committee meeting. Moving on to more, the Delta Conveyance Project. Finally, today and tomorrow, the Delta Stewardship Council is holding hearings regarding appeals of the Delta Conveyance Project certification of consistency with the Delta Plan, which is just basically the next step in the process toward whether or not the Delta Conveyance Project is going to move forward. It's an important step in the project to make sure the project meets its goals and is compliant with state law. The council is expected to issue a decision of specific findings within 60 days of the hearing or by the end of April. Staff will keep us updated on any developments. We'll now move to director's comments. Are there any director's comments before we move into more substance? Okay, there are no items on the consent calendar. We have five action discussion presentation items today. We'll start with the action item, which is approve memorandum of understanding with U.S. Bureau of Reclamation on behalf of the United States Department of Interior for the purpose of exploring a Colorado River imported water / interstate water transfer pilot program. The staff recommendation is to approve the MOU with the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation to explore planning and implementation activities for interstate transfers. I'm going to turn this over to Imported Water Director Mina Westford, who will give a presentation on this item.
Thank you, Chair Myers and members of the committee and the board. Happy to be here today to discuss this memorandum of understanding with the United States Bureau of Reclamation and potential other partners on an imported water and interstate transfer pilot program. So today we are going to be asking the committee to recommend approval of a memorandum of understanding with the Bureau of Reclamation and potential partners. This memorandum of understanding is focused on the planning and exploration of a potential interstate transfer pilot program. It does not authorize a transfer of any water. It does not dedicate any water to a transfer. What it does do is establish a collaborative framework so that we can evaluate whether or not and how pilot transfers could work across the lower basin. So as you heard from Efren Lopez in water planning today, the Colorado River system is under extreme aridification, structural, and hydrologic stress. Later on this afternoon, Alexi Schnell, our Colorado River Program Manager, will talk to you about the post-2026 operational framework that's being negotiated in real time. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time on post-2026 because she's going to cover that. But I would just wanted to highlight that interstate river management and structured exchanges already occur in multiple United States basins. What we're discussing today is not conceptually new, but it is about whether a structured pilot framework could operate responsibly within existing legal frameworks that exist today. Historically, interstate transfers have not occurred in the Colorado River Basin, not because they've been prohibited, but because the system was never designed to function that way. The 1922 Compact divides water by states. It doesn't look at market transfers. Federal contracts lock those priorities into a structure. And for decades, the hydrology and the programs have masked the urgency to include additional new tools. So as a result, the pathway to do interstate transfers was never really operationalized. So that context matters, because what we're evaluating here is not really a radical departure. It is whether or not an untested but lawful tool could operate responsibly within the existing authorities that we have here today. So the regions that have invested in diversified supply portfolios are better positioned to help stabilize the system. And I'm proud to say that that includes our region. San Diego has made generational investments, including the nation's largest seawater desalination plant with up to 56,000 acre feet annually of capacity. And those investments give us this option. It's a strategic way that we can move the conversation, because the board had the foresight to invest in resiliency. So over the last 2 years since I've been back at the Water Authority, Jeremy has spent a lot of time with me and teaching me about the desalination plant. We have hosted several different groups of interested parties that are serious about helping us and working towards an interstate transfer. There have been serious interstate and federal interests in exploring whether or not desalination and exchange mechanisms could support the basin reliability. Those conversations have evolved into the idea of a structured pilot program. That led to the drafting of this memorandum of understanding with Reclamation, the federal agency that is responsible for operating the system. The MOU before you is the result of deliberate federal and interstate engagement. This has not been a speculative idea. In fact, just at CRUA, the Colorado River Water Users Association, a few of us went and met with the Assistant Secretary, the Department of Interior, and Reclamation to again reiterate what we are trying to do and have garnered their support. So as you deliberate, as they deliberate the federal and interstate engagement, we have shared with them that this exploratory framework strengthens California's understanding of what the potential tools are at our feet. Given our take-or-pay exposure and our fixed cost structure, evaluating these tools are a part of our duty to the ratepayers. So the MOU establishes a collaborative process to explore a pilot. It allows us to evaluate the legal, operational, and accounting frameworks, specifically how priority, shortage allocation, and accounting would function in a pilot, questions that have never been formally tested before. It clarifies roles, responsibilities between the Water Authority and Reclamation and potential off-takers. It creates a shared understanding of how transfers could be implemented if we fully pursue them. The benefits to the Water Authority is it gives us the opportunity to evaluate an early interstate transfer in a controlled framework. It allows us to assess how transfers could complement our existing take-or-pay portfolio, not replace it, but enhance it. It could create tools to minimize future cost volatility and increase operational flexibility amongst the lower basin states. In a system defined by volatility, flexibility has a big value. So this is about protecting our ratepayers by understanding the tools before we really need them.
Now, what the MOU doesn't do is it does not commit the Water Authority to pursue a specific transfer with a specific partner. It does not dedicate any water supplies at all, and it doesn't commit us to any future transactions. It has no fiscal impact except for what our staff is, well, it costs a lot. So what our staff is doing for you. But it does not alter any compact allocations. It does not alter any existing federal contracts, and it does not change any priority structures. So any potential transaction would require a separate board approval. And so this board will contain full control over that. And either party that signs on to the MOU could terminate the MOU at any time. This is a planning framework. It's not an authorization. So the staff recommendation is to respectfully request the committee to recommend to the full board approval of the MOU with the Bureau of Reclamation and with the potential partners of Metropolitan Water District, the Southern Nevada Water Authority, Arizona DWR, and the Central Arizona Water Conservation District, which is an arm of the Central Arizona Project, or as you've heard, CAP. And so to explore potential for interstate transfers and exchanges. And this action is exempt from CEQA. And so with that, I'm happy to take any questions or answer.
Okay, thank you. First. All right, thank you. We have a motion and a second. Discussion, we have Vice Chair Madaffer.
Thank you very much, Mina, for that. And I have read this MOU 6 ways from Sunday, and I can just say congratulations on where we are today. Maybe a question for our general manager. you know, I remember back earlier this year, I think it was in June, I don't know, maybe it was in August when you, Dan, and Mina and I met with the Assistant Secretary of the Interior in Boulder, Colorado, and we were talking about this MOU, and this is something that what I don't think you mentioned, Mina, the Bureau and the Department of Interior is pushing very hard, much more than us, frankly. This is very important to Interior, very important to the Bureau. But I remember we were talking about getting it to CRUA. But I guess, Dan, help us understand why has there been such a delay? Because we were going to have it in December, and here we are now, February, and what's been going on?
It was about August, September in Boulder when we had that meeting, and Department of the Interior and Reclamation, they have been very supportive of this all along. It's a no-brainer. It's another tool on the river. It's something that, as Mina alluded to, we've all been trying to do on the river. It's just never been tested. And so they were eager to support us. You know, as far as desal goes, we have the water now. It's something that can be done. And so I think that that's really what helps provide the motivation for them. But, you know, in terms of why it took so long, well, candidly, you know, the success of this pilot program, presumably it could have happened with just the San Diego County Water Authority and Interior, but the logos that you saw on the previous slide, having conversations with those parties and getting them to understand what we're attempting to do with this, which is not subvert anything that is already standing on the river. It's to develop a program that works to, quite frankly, check one of the bigger boxes during lower basin negotiations, which is augmentation on the river. So that's why I believe it took so long, Jim, but we're there, and I believe and I hope that we have the support of the parties that are party to this.
So, and I think you all know that you heard earlier in water planning, the dire situation we have on the Colorado River right now. And any water that can be kept on the river, if you will, which is what this does, is beneficial to the entire lower basin and frankly, the upper basin. It's beneficial for the river. And so it is interesting that this has been lagging. And I want to ask specifically about one of the entities without saying anything negative, but you know, we've turned the page in a positive way with MWD. And I think that extends really throughout the Southwest, but I know that both you and Mina have experienced that, and I have as well in my conversations with people, but really, and just as recently as last Wednesday at the Colorado River Board meeting, I mean, from Palo Verde to Coachella to Imperial, they're all supportive of this. But yet I'm hearing rumblings that MWD is slowing things down. So what needs to be done with MWD to really continue this to help them show support for this project, this effort?
I think the first step with MWD, well, they're supportive of the MOU. They're a party to the agreement. Their board has yet to really hear the item. And so what we would look for is a future item in front of the MET board, similar to what you all are deliberating over today or hopefully approving today. To start that process, you know, in many ways, the Water Authority is the first party out of the gate with this, the first domino to fall, and hopefully it continues in that manner. You know, I think that MWD in general, it should be pretty intuitive in terms of this MOU and what it does for desal, and not only desal, but reuse, which is, of course, very important to Southern California. It explores both. And Pure Water Southern California is on the top of the priority list for Metropolitan. So I would think that there would be general support for this sort of thing.
I mean, doesn't this MOU help? I mean, their Pure is what, 5, 10, 15 years behind our desal plant, which is producing. Doesn't this help MWD facilitate a Pure Water movement, assuming this goes forward?
Yeah, in all likelihood, this framework that the parties developed together will be the framework for the Pure Water Southern California project. And of course, Metropolitan already has agreements with Southern Nevada Water Authority and the Central Arizona Project. Have those two parties have funded components of the environmental analysis. So yeah, this is all moving in the same direction, but it should help their effort.
Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Serrano.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, I want to take a moment to extend my deep thanks and appreciation to our general manager, our director of imported water, Mina Westford, and truly everyone on our Water Authority team who has had a role in this item. What we are considering today is truly pioneering work and could be a game changer, not only for San Diego County, but also the entire Southwest. This is a first of its kind framework and reflects the years of investment we've made as a region, the clear direction of this board that we've given to explore ways to flex our water supplies, and a lot of hard creative problem solving by staff. It's exactly the kind of forward-leaning leadership we've needed, and I just want to thank you both for all of your work in getting us to this moment today. Colleagues, as Director Madaffer just mentioned, as you know, last year at this board's direction, we finally reached a landmark settlement between the San Diego County Water Authority and the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California. That settlement was not just about ending litigation. It was about something much bigger. It was about fostering partnership between Metropolitan and the Water Authority that is constructive, focused on shared solutions, and not dictated what has always been. It was about moving forward together to fulfill our collective responsibility for the people we serve. It was about a new era of regionalism for Southern California that wasn't about an individual county or jurisdiction, but all of us in Southern California recognizing shared challenges and so too shared opportunity. It was about our care for affordability and the high cost being experienced by working families in this moment. It was about a shared commitment to work together to solve water challenges across the metropolitan service area and the broader Colorado River Basin. And this item is a direct reflection of that commitment. We all know the story by now. For more than two decades, the Colorado River Basin has been experiencing sustained challenges, reduced inflows, historically low elevations at Lakes Mead and Powell, and operating assumptions that simply do not look like they did a generation ago. Those conditions have fundamentally changed system operations and forced all of us across the basin to rethink reliability, flexibility, and how we move and manage water. And that's why this memorandum of understanding matters. Because this MOU at its core is a commitment to sit at the same table and think about solutions together. It creates a structured, collaborative space for us and our partners, including Metropolitan, to assess feasibility, understand legal pathways, and ensure that any future actions are transparent, equitable, and consistent with each party's responsibilities. And to me, that's not something to fear. That's something to embrace in this new era. And also because in this environment, submitting to the status quo and what has been is simply not an option. As I've continuously said, what has always been cannot dictate what we do now. If we are serious about the Colorado and strengthening the entire Colorado River system, then we should be serious about studying tools that allow water to move where it is most needed, when it is most needed, respect existing contracts and priorities while recognizing the new realities of a drier basin, help all of us, the Water Authority, Metropolitan, Arizona, Nevada partners, better manage shortages, stabilize reservoirs, and protect the communities we serve. And this MOU does exactly what our settlement envisioned. It moves us from fighting over yesterday's issues to building tomorrow's solutions together. It says very simply that we are willing to explore with Metropolitan and with our basin partners how our investments in desalinization can help support a more resilient, more flexible Colorado River system. And it signals that we are prepared to lean into cooperative problem solving at a time when that unity is more important than ever. And so, colleagues, I genuinely believe that the strongest position for all of us, including Metropolitan, is one where we move forward together, aligned around the need for flexible, legally sound, basin-wide tools with the ratepayer at the center functioning as our motivation. This MOU is a step in that direction. It honors our commitment to collaboration, and it reflects the kind of leadership that this moment demands. And I'll close with this. When I first got here in May of 2021, as we have now navigated these challenges about water supplies and most importantly, affordability, what we're talking about was a common suggestion, but it was always deemed unachievable, unthinkable, or just plain impossible. Colleagues, this is that conversation. And so it is for these reasons that I will be supporting this item, and I respectfully request your yes vote, as well as the support from all of our other parties who are party to this MOU. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Chair Serrano. We have Director Scalzetti.
Wow, I can't even follow that. I was just, you know, hoping maybe I'll just send my stuff to Serrano instead of ChatGPT. No, no, but if you can copy and just paste my comments from his. Nothing else to say. I think you hit on all the points, so I appreciate you hitting on all those points. I've been begging and screaming to get at the table and stop litigation, and that's what we've done. So I'm pretty proud of this. And last thing I just would offer up, if Director Murdaffer wants to switch with me with the second in the motion, and I think it's a little more passionate for you, I'm willing to do that. Thank you.
Can I just add one comment, because you reminded me of something. On the post 2026, you know, we're not at the table. So to your point and to Chair Serrano's point, this is our table. We just created it. So thank you.
Thank you. Vice Chair Katz.
Thank you. We've been giving direction to the general manager and to Mina and to the staff to come up with exactly this type of planning framework, this MOU, for the last 2 years. And Dan and his team have followed through and talked about it this way with the MOU and interstate, and the same thing with interstate and water transfers, doing exactly what we asked. And you could see that from how quickly the motion was made and the second was made as soon as the question was on the table. So you're doing exactly what we asked, so thank you. It was great to see the logos on the slide a few slides ago, where it showed Arizona Department of Water Resources, it showed Central Arizona Water Conservation, it showed San Diego County Water Authority, and it showed Metropolitan. I really think all of these players are going to be part of this solution. And having been a Met delegate now for the last 10 months, It is a different board, and it's a cohesive board that is really looking at the entire region. And I have no doubt in my mind that when this comes to the Met board, that this is going to be embraced just as welcome and just as excited as we are today to have this MOU and this framework. So thank you for all you're doing on this.
Thank you. We have Director Freyhoff.
All right. Thank you, Chair. You know, when I first came on the Water Authority Board a year or so ago, one of my main purpose, my main mission that I took upon myself was to try to make sure and support and advocate for balancing our supplies and demands, because I think our water purchases are one of our most most costly, I guess, in our budget. And so I realized the only way we could really make water affordable for our customers is to balance our supplies and demands. And I think this is a preliminary step in that direction. And so I fully support it, and kudos to staff on that. I'm also excited about the timing that we are going to have an urban water management plan before us this year that is going to look in more detail on our demands and supplies, again, to make sure we're getting that right balance of the two. And so I think the timing is perfect. And again, I support this item fully for, you know, for affordability of our customers. And again, appreciate staff's effort. Thank you.
Thank you. Last on the queue is Vice Chair Hilliker.
Thank you very much, Chairman. As I'm not on the committee, I fully support this MOU. You know, I think the genesis of this was back in 23 and 24 when we left water in Lake Mead and produced millions of dollars to take off of our budget. So I just want to say great job, staff. Again, Nick Serrano did a great job talking for all of us. So I'll end it with that.
Thank you. We have a motion, I believe, by Director Castaneda. I'm sorry? That's correct. And a second by, I'm sorry. We have a motion by Director Scalzetti and a second by Director Madaffer. No roll call is necessary. All in favor? Any opposed? Any abstain? Motion passes. All right. And next we have the MWD, the MWD delegates report. First up is Director Fong Sakai.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to be reporting on the Pure Water Southern California EIR today. So earlier this month, the Metropolitan Board certified the final environmental impact report for its Pure Water Southern California program. Thus far, the board has not yet voted to implement the program, and Metropolitan is still studying potential staging and other potential program options like direct potable reuse, which could significantly reduce the amount of backbone pipeline and help us reduce costs. Citing concern that Met is moving forward with the program before the board actually approves implementation, one board member made a motion to condition the EIR certification by requiring staff to conduct further analysis and assessments on other supply investments before additional spending on the program. Met's general manager said conditioning the certification would hurt Met's ability to negotiate with other entities for grants and partnerships. And while the committee supported the condition certification, ultimately, the board unanimously supported certifying an unconditioned EIR, as the GM assured that Metropolitan would evaluate all options before implementing Pure Water Southern California. Another important development this month is that Met started its next biennial project and rate setting process before its expected adoption this April. As it relates to Pure Water, Met proposed to include $150 million to fund early implementation of a 45 million gallons per day project stage as part of its CIP program budget. We'll move on to Delegate Denham and also our general manager, who's going to be sharing more details on Met's budget development.
Yeah, I'll just cover this at a really high level. The 27-28 budget for Metropolitan is looking to be around $5.6 billion. That's over a two-year period. Over that two-year period, there were Metropolitans looking at a 19% rate increase, spread evenly at 9.5%. The CIP, as Director Fong Sakai alluded to, it currently is just under a billion. 5 years from now, that number will probably be around $3 billion if Pure Water Southern California is implemented and approved on plan and on schedule. There's also 105 new FTEs that's being proposed for the MWD budget. Some of that, or the majority of it, I believe, is related to its operations and maintenance and CIP. Kind of backtracking a little bit, the CIP, those big numbers, what staff has presented is a picture of, I don't know if it was portrayed exactly as deferred maintenance, but there's certainly a backlog going on. And what staff sees, and I think the board has been told at least, is that there's going to be a baseline level of needed CIP spending into the foreseeable future at that $1 billion, if not $3 billion clip that I was kind of alluding to. So we got the first presentation. There are a number of workshops that are planned throughout this month and next towards approval of a budget and rates for Metropolitan in April. I think Director Miller is going to give some insight about Tuesday's workshop.
Thank you, Dan. As Dan said, we had our second workshop on Tuesday. We've got three more workshops coming up, and they hope to have a budget in place by April or May. Regarding Pure Water SoCal, we indicated we needed more information on costs, production, sizing, out-to-door costs, purchasers, agreements on who's going to take the water, what they're going to pay. There's a whole bunch. And one of the items that, of course, I'm big on property. One of the items I focused on is a $15 million accrual of a piece of property that's required for the system to function, buying the property in this budget before we've approved a budget or approved a project. So I brought up that I'm hoping this is not another Delta Island thing where we buy something that we don't need down the line. So they said that it's a real good deal and it's not overpriced and it's from the city of Whittier and it's a great deal, but it's in the $150 million budget for Pure Water. If we approve that initial spend, as I've alluded to in the past, it's the train leaving the station. It's just another log on the fire that we're approving of spending money. And then, of course, we'll get another one in 6 months saying, oh, we need to do this. So this is not, we're not committing, but we need to spend this money. So we're going to burn through all of the grant money, the free money we got. We're going to burn through that on this, and then we're going to be into spending real cash on the project. You've heard about the increases. Dan alluded to 9.5% for each of the next 2 years. If Pure Water goes through, it'll be 9% for the next 10 years. We will see $2,000 water by the early 30s. So the $900 water we're getting today will be closer to $2,000 by 33, 34. And that's a 9% increase for the foreseeable future. Without Pure Water, the increase dropped down to 7.5% for the first 2 years and slowly dropped down to 4% over the next 10 years. So it's a dramatic decrease in what the overall cost of water will be. So we're all studying that and waiting to see the numbers come out. And I'm pretty sure that it's going to be a phased project. I think that's becoming a reality, that it's going to be a $45 million starting project if it gets passed. Staff wants to spend $1.4 billion per biennium, biennium meaning two-year program. They want to spend $1.4 billion because it's determined it's got a $16 billion backlog of projects. They actually identified 680 projects in the meeting on Tuesday, and they have identified 380 that they want to work on. And that starts from a small $200,000 projects all the way up into the $50 million projects. Their remove and replace or remodel is quite extensive, even without Pure Water. So we are studying the scenarios again, came to the forefront on the C and D scenarios. And a couple of members made questions on whether we should abandon the D scenario and focus entirely on the C scenario, which is plenty of water and low demand, as opposed to high demand and low water. So we may be moving to implementing that. And if we do, it means we need less new water and some storage rather than a lot of new water and a lot of storage. So we'll be analyzing that to see what it looks like for the next 10 years. And obviously, being an elected water guy who gets voted onto the VID board, which places me here and at Met, I still relate to the customer out there that has to pay these water bills. And so our delegation up there is constantly talking about affordability and trying to keep rates real and projects real and needs rather than wants. That concludes my report. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And before we move on, I just want to express my appreciation to the Met delegates for the hard work that they do. A lot of times, I don't think we realize how much traveling they do, how much time they spend on all of these issues. And I just wanted that to be a reminder for the work that they're doing, not just for San Diego, but for our entire Southern California region. So thank you for that. It's very much appreciated. And we have Director Roback.
So, Marty, I watched that board meeting that you spoke. Thank you for listening. Many ratepayers. I'm wondering, from a ratepayer standpoint, is there the Los Angeles Taxpayers Association was speaking out against the project?
We are starting to see rumblings of people questioning it, but right now, again, talks with our delegation, with Dan and with Mina, to me, this is deja vu all over again. I remember going to the city or to the community forums we had for DSAL and sitting there and listening to all the people come in and tell us how wonderful DSAL was. All the unions, the NGOs, the politicians, this is the greatest thing since sliced cheese. Well, it's deja vu. We have the same groups coming through, praising the projects, saying we need to do this, we need to spend the money, the unions want the work, the politicians want the water, and not one person's talking about what the cost is going to be coming out the end. And so it's the usual well-meaning crowds that are speaking out for it. Very few speak against it, but we are seeing some people talking about affordability and what's that really going to look like. And it's been a moving target. We really haven't set down on what we're going to build, who's going to buy it, and what does that cost out the door. I reported a year ago, probably it's been a year, that the initial out the door cost per acre foot of water for the full Mahdi, which is 150 MGD, was $5,200 an acre foot. We have not got the numbers on what the 45 MGD is going to be, but it should be at that or maybe less because the big pipeline's not figured in it. But they have to meld that cost into the water system. Nobody's going to buy $5,000 water and dump it into the ground and wait to pull it up 5 years from now. They're going to want a deal on it. So that's why we need to know who's buying and what they're paying. So you can deduct that from the out-the-door cost and find out what that difference is, because that's going to be melded into the average rate over the entire system. So if you start doing math and you start doing it, it runs from anywhere from $250 an acre foot add up to $750 an acre foot add to the cost, because what you're doing is you're replacing cheap water from the Delta and the Colorado River with very expensive water. You're not adding it to the system, you're replacing part of the system. So it exponentially hits your cost more than it would if we were just adding more water to the system because we had more sales. Right now, we're just replacing inexpensive water with expensive water. So those are the things we're trying to figure out, and we don't have that information. And as the train chugs out of the station, we keep doing more and more to make this project happen without understanding what the costs are going to be. And that's what we're fighting for. That the motion that you talked about hearing was that we wanted them to be accountable to provide us the information before we vote on any more approvals. And that motion got retracted.
Thank you for that excellent question, Director. I see nothing else, any other speakers in the queue. So we'll move on to the next item. We're doing a little bit of a shuffle here, but we're first going to have the presentation on the Colorado River Basin post 2026 operational guideline update. I'm going to turn this over again to Imported Water Director Mina Westford to introduce this item and staff.
Thank you. Alexi Schnell, our Colorado River Program Manager, is going to give us a brief update on the Colorado River Basin post 2026 operational guidelines. As it was said earlier by Chair Myers, the comments are due to reclamation on March 2nd. And so I don't want to steal Alexi's thunder. I'm going to let her give you the presentation.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mina. Good afternoon, Chair Myers, members of the committee and board. The corresponding memo for this update can be found starting on page 115 in your packet. And I'll just start off by saying this really is more of a check-in update than providing an answer, because everything with the negotiations and what's going on in the Colorado River for new guidelines is very much in uncertainty right now. But I will provide you with as much as we know. Okay, so a little bit of background. The Colorado River and its two primary reservoirs, Lake Mead and Powell, are operated by the Bureau of Reclamation under guidelines and agreements that are expiring this year. We also have binational agreements with Mexico expiring. So the operational guidelines really are essential for balancing water supply and demand, especially in the face of prolonged drought conditions and climate change that we're seeing. So all over the news, the windows to develop the new guidelines, it's narrowing. The guidelines are needed prior to October 1st for the start of water year 2027. A little bit of background, if you're not familiar with what this says up here, reclamation's NEPA process, the National Environmental Policy Act, known as NEPA, is federal environmental law that requires federal agencies to assess the environmental effect of proposed actions as part of their decision-making process. So under NEPA, Reclamation published its draft environmental impact statement, or called draft EIS, which is meant to shape the development of the new guidelines. So this complex timeline here is meant to point out the fact that we've been at this for a while. Reclamation kicked off the process to initiate the process for the post-26 guidelines back in 2023, so almost 3 years ago. And in early 2024, we were still looking back then for a consensus agreement between the seven basin states, the upper basin and the lower basin. That didn't happen. Both the upper basin and the lower basin provided their own alternative to reclamation. We still thought we'd see a draft EIS back then in 2024. That's what was just released last month. So last year, a year ago in January of 2025, an alternatives report, if you saw that, was released. That gave us some insight into the alternatives that reclamation would include in that draft EIS that just came out. And then this past year, last year in 2025, the basin states continued to meet, still no consensus 2 years in. So reclamation established, they set a deadline or milestone of November 11th for there to be a consensus agreement. As we know, that was missed. February 14th, you heard talked about today, another milestone set for there to be a consensus. That's been missed. In the meantime, reclamation really needed to keep to the NEPA process, because if we're gonna have guidelines in place by October 1st, the NEPA process needed to proceed. So they did release the draft EIS in January without a preferred alternative. And then the items up there with the orange box around them are just for a future. March 2nd, Mina mentioned, Monday is the deadline, the end of the public comment period. That's the deadline for comment letters to be submitted on the draft EIS. And then this summer, we do still anticipate reclamation releasing a final EIS and record of decision. So much to come on that. Okay, so I want to take a quick look at basin hydrology. I don't think this is any secret. Everyone's hearing this in the news. It's all over about worsening conditions in the basin. So storage in lakes Powell and Meade are at record lows, and the poor hydrology really is compounding the issue and is one of the components that's making negotiations between the basin states very difficult. So one of the numbers I'll highlight here, the forecasted inflow for water year 2026, that's projected to be at only 52% of normal. And that's a really interesting figure considering right above that, you'll see the precipitation is at 91% of normal. It's recently improved a little. The snowpack at 69% of normal, but for the forecasted inflow to still be so low, that we see happen likely because of evaporation and dry soils related to climate change. So that is really changing conditions in the basin. And recently announced by Reclamation that if hydraulic conditions continue to deteriorate, Reclamation's latest projections indicate that Lake Powell for the first time could actually decline to minimum power pool level in December. And of course, Reclamation is not going to let that happen, but the projections show that that could occur. And then this is just to quickly highlight operational policy addressed in the draft EIS. It's different for the upper basin. The operational elements that need to be looked at for the upper basin are different from the lower basin. For the upper basin, it looks at contributions through conservation, releases from the upper basin reservoirs to protect Lake Powell, and then Lake Powell releases to Lake Meade. Lower basin, we're looking at shortage reductions, triggers for those shortages, and then system flexibility with water transactions and storage. So listed here are the five alternatives that are included and analyzed in the draft EIS that was released in January. And none of these was identified as a preferred alternative. So I'm not going to go into a lot of detail in terms of what's actually included and involved in each of these alternatives, but the board memo associated with this presentation does have that detail if you want to look at that. Just importantly to note that is that these alternatives here really represent a broad range of alternatives, and that will likely provide the necessary analyses for components that may eventually make up a preferred alternative in the final EIS. So if there is a consensus agreement that does come forward, likely that can just be dropped into the environmental analysis. A lot of that analysis will already cover it. That's been done, and then that could be named as a preferred alternative in the final EIS. So we remain hopeful. Shown here just to show you how broad these alternatives are. You can see in the first column that release volumes from Powell to Meade for between the five alternatives range from as low as 4.7 million acre feet up to 12 million acre feet per year. The second column shows the maximum shortage, to the lower basin in a year's timeframe. And that ranges from a low of 600,000 acre feet per year all the way up to 4 million acre feet of a shortage in a year. So, and as we know, a priority, as Mina talked about today, a priority for the Water Authority is flexibility that would allow for intrastate and interstate water transfers and exchanges. And as shown in the final column there, three of these alternatives do have that provision. So here's a list, I won't read through them all, but some of our main issues of concern in the draft EIS. Notably, two alternatives violate the law of the river. And the draft EIS does not analyze any mandatory reductions in the upper basin. So the burden is clearly being put on the lower basin. Now looking at most recent negotiations, the governors, and you may have seen this in the news, the governors of the seven basin states were called to Washington, D.C. to meet with Interior Secretary Doug Burgum on January 30th. And while the talks were viewed as positive, there was no real movement towards consensus. Governor Newsom was unfortunately unavailable for that meeting, but California was represented by California Natural Resources Agency Secretary Wade Crowfoot. So I want to comment here that California's principal negotiator for the post 26 is J.B. Hamby, who is the chair of the Colorado River Board. And I do want to recognize that Water Authority Director Jim Adaffer is the vice chair of the Colorado River Board. So while the intent is to create stability through guidelines that would govern the next 20 years of river operations, Reclamation has now stated that it would consider a shorter-term deal as a bridge into a long-term deal. So that is pretty much where the negotiations are right now, looking at those shorter-term options. So what's at stake? This is a slide that was previously shared at our November update. The main points remain the same. If consensus is not reached, Reclamation can impose water management rules unilaterally. There's a loss of flexibility and a litigation risk. And then if there's no action and operations revert back to what's called the 1970 LROC, that's what was in place before the current guidelines that are expiring, we will lack the tools to adapt to changing hydrologic conditions. And very importantly, in terms of shortage, the secretary can unilaterally make decisions on reductions. So the Water Authority's perspective on what we want to see in a new set of guidelines really remains unchanged. First and foremost, we continue to support finding basin-wide consensus. And then to highlight the most important ones on that list there, to protect our region's investments and reliability, expand flexibility through water transfers and exchanges, again, as Mina talked about earlier with the MOU item, and we must maintain system stability to keep the river flowing for all users. Looking ahead at next steps, you've heard talked about today the comment letters on the draft EIS that are due Monday. The Water Authority's letter will be going in before that deadline. We've also, as you heard, provided a template letter for the member agencies. And, you know, really it comes down to as efforts towards consensus continue, the pressure is building. I mean, this has been almost 3 years now, and we don't have a consensus. And now we're really down to the final months. Reclamation is expected to release its final EIS and decision this summer with that intention to have the guidelines in place before October 1st. And without a consensus agreement, there's really a great deal of uncertainty across the basin. And that's what it really comes down to. It's just uncertainty. And we just don't know what Reclamation is going to do. So that concludes my presentation, and staff will certainly be back with more updates as we know more.
Thank you. I see Director Molina.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not on this committee, but I did have a question. Maybe this question is more for Director Madaffer. What is the probability of actually reaching any consensus? Are we pretty far from it? Are there certain sticking points that we might be able to negotiate? That's one. And second, on your page 58, where there was a lot of litigation concerns, what if we don't reach a consensus? Now what?
I believe the best thing we're going to see is a 5-year deal. That remains to be seen. We don't know yet what the Bureau is going to do. I do think the MOU we just talked about is very important toward helping the river. I think that's why all agencies need to be part of it. I think litigation needs to be avoided at all costs. The last thing we want is the United States Supreme Court to make a decision 15 or 20 years from now, which is how long litigation likely would last. It would be nothing but a full employment act for lawyers. The reality is, as you heard earlier, the river levels are horrible. I think the federal government needs to put more money into conservation. The biggest user of water on the Colorado River is agriculture. There is a lot of room for greater conservation in the upper basin. But so far, states like Colorado, for example, have vehemently refused to even take one dime in conservation money, which could ultimately reduce the demand on the river. I think I saw something today from Ian James of the LA Times that talked about so much of the water from the Colorado River is used to grow cattle hay. So if we could just have a greater level of conservation there. So it really, the federal government needs to help fund conservation, because if you keep in mind a state like Wyoming or Utah, where they may only get one or two cuts of alfalfa per year because of the weather, unlike the Imperial Valley, which might get 6, 7, or 8. It doesn't pay to invest in conservation, but if the federal government could put that investment in, it would reduce the demand on the river. And then we might have a little bit more of a logical use. The river, the lower basin is where the people are, you know, 40 million people. And the upper basin, I don't remember, Dan, what that number is, but 5, 6 million, you know,
I don't know if even that,
I mean, what's the population of the state of Wyoming? 300,000. So, you know, you think about these things, but Dan, sorry for the long diatribe, but the reality is I'm thinking the best you're going to see is a 5-year deal. If it were up to me and I could wave a wand, I would say, let's just continue the current guidelines for the next 5 years while we change some of the players and figure out a new approach.
That answered the question perfectly.
Okay. Thank you, Director Heidemann.
That's awesome. The world according to Jim Madaffer. I love that. Yeah, so first of all, if you don't know all the work that Jim does for the CRB, he does a tremendous amount of work, a lot of effort. He advocates for us extremely well, so thank you for that, Jim. But my question, I don't know if it's for Mina or Dan or even Jim. So, I mean, you read these articles about the state of Arizona, other states that are building these war chests heading towards litigation, right? It seems like that is the trajectory we're headed. So what does that scenario look like? If there is litigation that is started, what happens in terms of how the river is managed, especially with respect to the scenario that Alexei just described about the condition of the Lake Mead in December? I mean, that seems pretty dire to me. So how, what does that process or scenario look like? I don't know, Dan?
Yeah. Should I take the first stab? There's a lot of possibilities, Director Heidemann. You know, I think that if there is litigation, it's going to be protracted, right? It's going to be a long time. You know, whether or not the priority system is upheld during that litigation, you'd say 50-50. So let's say it's not, and there are cuts. Cuts will be deep and severe. But ultimately, hydrology will win the day, I think. You know, the river is projected to be, or the Lake Mead is projected to be 1,000 feet here pretty soon. Deadpool, you're getting to close to 800 acre feet. So Mother Nature will probably decide before any lawsuit is settled.
I would just add, if they go into litigation, that really stops all the discussion, right? People will go into their corners and there won't be any opportunities to even be able to have a discussion about opportunities that are there for even a Band-Aid fix, because that's what litigation does.
And I'll just add, the state of California is also, without talking too much about it, we're not asleep at the switch. If it gets to litigation, the state of California will be ready. We have the greatest share of the Colorado River, and we are going to do everything we can to defend our rights to that share to the last bitter drop. So, you know, Colorado, all those guys that want to start playing games, you know, bring it on. I think that's the last move, though. It's a stupid move to go to litigation. And that's why I think we ought to just continue the existing guidelines and take a deep breath. And like Dan said, the hydrology is what's going to ultimately decide things. You can only divide up what you don't have. You can't divide up what you don't have. And that's really what they're fighting over right now. And I frankly think the lower basin has been very, very reasonable. I'm sure Mike Lee will put out in the next thing tomorrow, the Ian James column that was in today's Boiling Point. It was a column he put in the LA Times. It's not an article, it's a email column, but I shared it with them earlier today, and it's very good. And can I just say one last thing? Dan and Mina, and frankly, the whole imported water team at the Water Authority, they are just burning the midnight oil over this thing and really deserve a lot of praise and a lot of credit. Obviously, we're going to have a discussion later today in the board meeting about some other things that are related to all of this. And we've just approved that MOU. This agency is doing more than anyone in the lower basin right now to really help preserve the life of the Colorado River. And I think Dan and Mina owe a lot of, we owe a lot of gratitude to them for that.
All right, thank you. Next in queue is Director Robach, then Director Freehoff.
So my question is kind of a follow-up to Eric. So, and this is towards directed to Jim as well, Director Madaffer. I read an article yesterday that the Central Arizona Project has a working group they formed, and they're actually out on the airwaves now with commercials defending, you know, and advocating for their position. I don't know if you want to go on the record on this, but what Dan's telling me, so you're shaking your head, some dysfunction at the Colorado River Board level where you can't get all on the same page. And again, like you said, Jim, California has a lot to lose. So I'm a little, I mean, not that that's going to make a difference at the end of the day, running commercials or whatever, but it seems like we need to be strongly advocating for our position. Yeah, if you want to speak to that at all.
I would just say that people have got to say what they have to say because they have their own political interests in that state. I would think the reason, as you heard earlier, the Department of Interior is really pushing hard for the MOU is because the Trump administration recognizes how important it is that we get water to Arizona because Arizona needs water. So it's political. And I think as long as we know that, what was it Mark Twain said? What's the line? Whiskey's for drinking and water's for fighting. And that's where we are right now.
Great, thank you. I'm not on your committee. I appreciate the opportunity to talk. Again, I wanna also give kudos to staff for their effort on this and to our Colorado River Board representative, Director Madaffer, for their efforts on this and for specifically making sure that the Water Authority's interests are being heard on the river in regards to a flexible approach that will allow for transfers. I appreciated hearing that we're sending a comment letter on that issue, which is important. I also think it's valuable that you did reach out to the member agencies. Santa Fe Irrigation District will be sending a comment letter also, kind of tailoring it to our district. And so I think the more you can, again, coordinate with the member agency managers, keep them in the loop, I think is important because united we're stronger. So thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no more comments on that item, we'll move to the next, which is a presentation. Sorry, is a presentation on the Met Camp for Water update. I'm going to turn this over, guess who, to Imported Water Director Mina Westford to introduce this item and staff.
Thank you. This next item is a holdover for last month, so I appreciate your patience with us. And it's about the CAMP, the Climate Adaption Master Plan for Water at Metropolitan Water District. And it's really going to set up in the next couple months. You heard Director Miller talk about the budget. And so this is going to, all these programs that Metropolitan is reviewing is supposed to go through this CAMP process. So this is a refresher on what you heard from us last year. If you remember, Chair Adan Ortega and Chief Sustainability Officer Liz Crossan came and spoke about it and advocated for this process. But Alex is going to give you a brief overview of that program again and set us up for the next few months of decision-making that's supposed to happen at Metropolitan.
Thank you, Mina. Good afternoon, Chair Myers, members of the committee and board. I'm here to give an update on the Climate Adaptation Master Plan process that Metropolitan has been going through. This is something that's been a long time in the making with the plan that in 2026, Metropolitan starts to implement this process to actually start making some decisions on some of their upcoming infrastructure investments. Just to provide a brief overview of the process and where Metropolitan has been and where it's going. Historically, Metropolitan's used its integrated resources plan to make investment decisions. In 2023, Metropolitan recognized that climate change was a serious risk to the organization and stood up this climate adaptation master plan with really the intent to integrate water resources with financial and climate planning. The Camp for Water process is an iterative process. I think part of that process means that as information comes in, the process can tend to change, and it has changed since the inception of the overall CAMP process back in 2023. Really, at the end of the day, this process is intended to help guide Metropolitan's board on making investment decisions. The idea here is that in 2026, Metropolitan will be bringing through a number of projects, including the Delta Conveyance Project, Pure Water Southern California, and sites through this process, and it will help provide information to help guide the board's investments. A lot of the information that was derived in the Climate Adaptation Master Plan process really came out of the Integrated Resources Plan needs assessment, which happened back in 2020 and 2021. You'll hear, and you've probably heard a number of times that this idea of scenario planning and what scenario planning means. This is an oversimplified chart. I just want to recognize that right up front. You hear scenario A, B, C, and D, and those are the four scenarios represented here on this chart. The scenarios, even though they're simple and there's only four of them, they're backed up by a whole host of different drivers. Those different drivers are water demands, climate change, population, supplies, assumptions about the economy. All of them have different assumptions incorporated within them. And for example, scenario A and scenario D have different assumptions based off demands, different assumptions based off where the economy's at, different assumptions based off the population. And those really drive these four different scenarios. The graphic here off to the right-hand side is oriented in such a way where toward the top, scenario A and scenario B have greater imported supply stability. Scenario C and scenario D have less imported supply stability. And then A and C on the left-hand side result in a lower demand on Metropolitan, and B and D on the right-hand side have a higher demand on Metropolitan. And I think the most critical part of these scenarios here was that this was Metropolitan's way to depart from a single projection, recognizing that we don't necessarily know what the future holds. And any one of these four scenarios was just as plausible as likely to happen as any of the other scenarios. So A was as likely to happen as D, B as likely as C. In 2023, Metropolitan adopted a policy of using Representative Concentration Pathway 8.5. What Representative Concentration Pathways are there really assumptions about greenhouse gas emission? You can see off to the right-hand side, there's three common greenhouse gas emission scenarios that are often used for climate planning. It's RCP 2.6, which is low emissions, RCP 4.5, which is low to moderate emissions, which are more or less kind of on track with today. And then RCP 8.5, which is a very high emission future. The state of California uses an RCP 8.5 emission standard for most of their planning. And in order to be consistent with that, Metropolitan also adopted a policy of using RCP 8.5 in its climate adaptation master plan process. What that did, and remember, all four scenarios were plausible. And what you can see here off on the right-hand side is we call this the cone of uncertainty. The intent here is to recognize that as you move through time, your future, the further out you get, is more uncertain, right? We know with much more certainty what 2027 holds than we do what 2047 holds, right? So the further you go out in time, the more uncertain the future is. When Metropolitan started the process, all four of these scenarios were just as likely as the other. when you look at out in the future, scenario A was just as likely as scenario D. When they adopted this policy of using RCP 8.5, what it did was it essentially took the bottom two scenarios off the table. A and B, which use scenario 4.5, are no longer being considered by the Metropolitan Board. What we're looking at is really scenario C and scenario D, which happens to coincide with two scenarios that need a much greater investment in order to maintain that reliability out into the future. It really, I think from a water authority concern, it reduced the board's ability to look at what future risk might hold if scenario A or scenario B play out, since you're making a much greater investment. That kind of brings us to some areas of continued focus that, you know, as Metropolitan moves through this process, we would really like to be reflected. What you see when you look at Metropolitan scenario planning and their modeling is that both the shortage frequency and magnitude really rise sharply post 2040, highlighting the need for much longer term investments than near term investments. When you look at these project timelines, both for Delta Conveyance, for sites, for Pure Water, those project timelines don't really align all that well with Metropolitan's decision-making timelines. You can see that kind of play out in Metropolitan's budget today. You know, there's assumptions being made about investing in a 45 MGD project before Metropolitan has put the Pure Water program through the Camp for Water process. Metropolitan's participation in early planning design and permitting really does help maintain that project viability. When you look at that long-term uncertainty, Metropolitan may need to make some decisions on early planning and design to maintain that project viability without necessarily implementing a project. So I think helping to maintain that long-term fiscal sustainability is important to us. Additionally, when you look at some of Metropolitan's investments, you can see what that looks like here off to the right-hand side. Sites is $1.7 billion, Delta Conveyance Project, $9.5 billion would be Metropolitan share. Pure Water Southern California, $9.8 billion. These are all in today's dollars, you know, a lot of uncertainty surrounding all of what those could ultimately be at. But Metropolitan still maintains a revenue model that is highly dependent on sales. When you take any of these projects and you meld it into the rate, it makes the rate increase exponentially, as Director Miller pointed out as part of the delegate report. It is a serious concern. In addition, when you look at the development of some of the local supplies and conservation regulations, that both represents a opportunity for us to offset the need for some of this investment. It also represents a significant risk if you do invest in some of these projects and yet the demands don't materialize. So something to keep in mind there. We really think that as Metropolitan continues to evaluate some of these opportunities, they need to look at both the stability and predictability of Metropolitan's fiscal future in making some of these investments. When you look at some of the key takeaways, there, you know, as Metropolitan moves through the Camp for Water process, there's the significant risk of overinvestment, given that they've taken two of their lower scenarios off the table. The intent of scenario planning was to prioritize low-risk investments. As they've gone through this process, they've maybe moved a little bit away from that, being that they're looking at scenario D, which has a potential shortfall of 1.3 million acre feet, which is Metropolitan sales today. Trying to achieve an investment at that level could result in significant financial issues for Metropolitan. Additionally, Metropolitan's current business model doesn't really align all that well with the investments currently under decision. Member agencies don't have to make any commitments at today's point in time. And affordability and stability remain a high priority for the Water Authority, and aligning this process and the projects that Metropolitan's evaluating under this process is a significant risk. With that, that concludes my presentation and would be happy to answer any questions.
I don't see any. Oh, I see Director Miller. Microphone?
Yeah. We don't know how Camp for Water is going to work. We don't know if it's going to work. It's just out there. It's a process where we grade the projects for need, cost, reliability. Is it going to solve all of our future problems and what have you? But it's a whole new program. It took 2 years to develop. And we don't know if it's going to work, because we haven't run a project through it. And so we're concerned that we have a program that may not give us the answers we need. The projects are graded on a 1 through 5 grading. And I looked at it and I said, what happens when all the projects get a 3? You're right back there looking at which one are we gonna do? They are all equal. And we can't do all of them. So my concern, and I voiced to them, was you've got the parameters so tight that you could have equal projects. They need to maybe spread the parameters so you got a 1 through 10 instead of 1 through 5, just so we can split them up and make them stand by themselves. So we're hoping the Camp for Water process will happen next year and we can take this first pure water project through it. And then we'll see if it actually comes to fruition. I know former Director Goldberg worked very hard with the staff up there to try to come up with a program where we could fairly analyze these big projects to make sure we don't have stranded assets, underutilized assets, and high costs. So it's yet to be determined whether the process works. Hope springs eternal.
All right. Thank you. We've got Chair Emeritus, Director, Delegate, Vice Chair Katz.
Thanks. Thank you. Thanks, Alex. There's so many unknowns when you're doing these plannings, especially on Camp for Water. And the Metropolitan decided to go with Scenario D, which is the most demand. They get a lot of water right now from the Colorado. If negotiations did not go the correct way and they lost a lot of the water that they are that they count on, and also the inevitable drought, wouldn't Scenario D be the right scenario?
Scenario D could very well, I mean, it's as plausible.
Watch as, this political answer.
It's as plausible of a scenario as any of the other ones. So it could very well end up being the full scenario. I think the concern is that the board needs to understand the risk of investing in Scenario D if Scenario A ends up ultimately playing out. When you look at Metropolitan's negotiations on the Colorado River, they are planning on losing up to 200,000, maybe even more acre feet annually out of their base apportionment. Scenario D, Scenario C do have a much greater investment in supply. At the same time, when you look at their current demands today, they're at 1.3 million acre feet, even below that, which is the lowest that they've had in their history. So, things can tend to balance out. I think the biggest thing I would impart on the board is that it's about looking at that risk and what you might do if a different scenario in the future plays out that, those demands don't materialize.
That's an excellent answer, Alex. I'll just add, we're not including all of the member agencies' LRP programs, right? And so there's a lot of other individual local agencies that are also making their own investments that count towards that supply gap.
We just need to stay aware that with Colorado and what's happening with Colorado, with an inevitable drought and other demands like that, Metropolitan and all water agencies have to be looking at the future. And pure water is one of those things. And you have to do those type of plannings, just like we did 30 years ago, 20 years ago on desal, and it was the right decision at the time.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think the other point to think about is building in that flexibility. If you do a baseload project like a pure water, how do you put together a program that builds that flexibility in so that you can, if a future plays out that's different, you can make sure that you're offloading that to maybe a Colorado River party or an external party.
Last comment. Director Miller and I are wrestling on who really is the man of the people.
Should I decide that? Okay. Yeah. All right. All right. That's Dan. Okay. You'll decide that. Thank you. No one else in the queue. I just want to comment that I think staff knows that I've been paying a lot of attention to those scenarios over the last few years, had some discussions about them, and I'm just happy that we're keeping all of them on the table, or at least proposing that they all be kept on the table, because the last thing we need is to spend billions and billions and billions of dollars and possibly have stranded assets. So thank you for keeping that on the table and giving the opportunity to the Met Board to look at everything when they make their decisions. And with that said, there are no information items on the agenda. There is no closed session items here, although we're going to have one in the main session to continue on with some of these discussions. And we are, I'm sorry.
Go for it. I'll talk after you hit the gavel.
Okay. And we are adjourned, and we will have LPO in 5 minutes.
We will not have LPO in 5 minutes.
Okay.
We're going to skip LPO today. We lost a number of our speakers because of some of the technical difficulties that we had with our audio video. They had prior commitments. Chair, sorry. We'll get them on next time, but we're going to go straight into formal board at 2:00. So that's about 8 minutes.